Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I realized I didn't know where my kid was. I can still feel it. It all happens all over again. You make excuses in your head. Okay, maybe this is what happened. Maybe she went to so-and-so's house and doesn't have a phone. She wasn't there. And everywhere we called, she wasn't there. But you kept assuming that she was going to show up. Part of me still thinks she's going to walk in the door for something. And another part of me doesn't think that'll ever happen. I want to say I hold out hope. But I'm also a realist, and I know that 20 years later, that probably isn't true.
On June 3rd, 2001, 15-year-old Erin Pospisil wanted to go visit a friend, but she couldn't find a ride to her friend's home, not far from the Pospisil home in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Erin's dad was asleep after his shift at work, and her mom was still working. Erin continued to ask around for rides, and eventually, a family friend who was at the home offered to take her to her friend's house. What happened from there is a mystery, but there's one thing that we do know. Erin has never been seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 297 of The Vanished, Erin Pospisil's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 15-year-old Erin Pospisil was a typical teenager. She had an engaging, bubbly personality, and everyone loved being around Erin. Everyone we spoke to about Erin had nothing but fond memories to share with us. One person we spoke to was Carolyn Pospisil, Erin's stepmom, and she was instrumental in helping us share Erin's story and also connecting us with Erin's friends. This is what Carolyn told us about Erin.
I've known Erin since she was about 3. She lived with us all along. We had full custody. She grew up in our house. We have 4 kids that she grew up with. She's always been the bubbliest of all my kids and loved life to the fullest. She was active in everything she could be active in. She rode a horse one time and thought it was the best thing ever and loved horses very much so after that. She hung out with her friends more than anybody else I have, kid-wise. You always knew where you stood with her. If she was mad at you, you knew why she was mad. And if she was happy with you, she was all over you and everything was great and dandy. She was always the happiest kid of the 4 of them. She loved everything. She loved to sing. She loved to dance. She was in the dance team at school. She was never really into sports very much, but was very active in other ways. She was definitely the most animated of all of our kids. She'd talk to anybody.
We also spoke to a friend of Erin's after Carolyn connected us. Her name is Amy. Amy considers Erin to be a cousin, and she told us that she's known Erin for as long as she can remember.
I've known Erin all her life. My dad and her dad were best friends. They grew up together, and then her mom and my mom grew up together, and were pretty much, she was like my cousin. Jimmy, her oldest brother, is like 7 weeks younger than I am. So we all just kind of grew up together and as family. She was very outgoing, always laughing. I mean, like when I got my driver's license, she was always with me all the time. And we were out just, you know, we'd go shopping or go hang out at friends' house. We were very sociable. She had a whole bunch of friends everywhere. Like, she went to Jefferson with me for a while, and I introduced her to my friends, and they all pretty much just flocked to her. Family was really important to her.
Erin's childhood friend Christy also spoke with us, and she told us about how she met Erin and that they quickly became close friends.
I can actually tell you the first time we met. We were still in elementary school. She had lived down the street from us. I mean, that's where we both grew up, was on 32nd Street. And she used to walk by all the time, and me and my friend Jessica would be outside playing. We had a little gas station at the corner of our street that her and her sister would walk to all the time, or she would just walk down there. And she would see us all the time, and she would just kind of stare over at us. And so one day we invited her to come play. And we all hung out in my backyard in the sandbox all day long. And she asked if she could come over the next day, and she did. And this became a daily thing to where, I mean, before you knew it, me and her were so close. We were having sleepovers at each other's houses. We would play all day, wander the neighborhoods. Getting older, I think maybe around 11, 12, I got a paper route that me and Erin split and both made money off of. We delivered the paper together. We did a lot. I used to take her to my Girl Scout outings. We would go camping with Carolyn and Jem. I mean, we just did a lot. Erin was very sociable, very. And I moved away my ninth grade year. I had to move to Charlotte, North Carolina. And it was that year that she went missing.
Erin was raised primarily by her father and stepmom, Carolyn. Erin's biological mom has struggled with addiction for many years, and Erin was witness to some of that. This is what Christy shared with us.
Erin's mom had a lot of problems. She was really bad with drugs and alcohol, bad addiction problems. She went to prison for several, many years. Erin and them used to get together and make trips and go see her in prison. And Erin would just be, she hated, I think, seeing her like that. And Erin was very, she's always been emotional. So it would take her a day or two after seeing her mom in prison to just kind of snap back out of it and become her peppy little self again. She went through a lot. Her mom, I know she got out, she cleaned up. And Carolyn, she's even helped her. And she's raised these kids. Erin never thought of Carolyn anything less than her mother, ever. I remember us just going on camping trips, and Carolyn, we would all sit around the campfire, and Carolyn would just sing to us. It was awesome. She has the most beautiful singing voice. And we would all run around the campground and just play. Carolyn has always been so warm and loving to those kids and given everything. She's never, ever stopped. I've never seen somebody reach out and do as much as she's done for 20 years now, looking for this little girl, because that's her daughter. She thinks of her no less. You forget Carolyn's just a stepmom. You really do, because she's not. She's her mother. There's no doubt about it. She raised her.
Though Carolyn and Erin's dad did the majority of parenting, Erin's biological mom, Christine, was part of her children's lives when she was able to be there for them. Carolyn told us more about that.
Her mom lives in the same town that we lived, that this all happened in. She's in good shape. I mean, she's off parole and she's doing good and got a solid boyfriend that she's had for years and solid job and real stable. Once she got out, there's never been any issue with going back or even thinking things could happen the way she would. Her mom is an amazing grandma. She is there for her grandkids like no other. I gotta give her lots of kudos where that's concerned.
In 2001, Erin was 15. She was starting to explore her budding independence and freedoms that we all want as teenagers. The summer break from school had just started, and Erin was excited to go hang out with her friend, Britt. They had an evening planned of hanging out, and they were also excited to plan a birthday party that night for the following weekend. Erin's stepmom, Carolyn, told us that June 3rd, 2001, the day that Erin vanished, wasn't out of the ordinary at all for their family. She told us that their home was usually action-packed and full of people.
We were a multi-generational house. Her grandma lived with us the majority of the time. There was almost always an adult at the house. We all worked more than one job, including her grandma. So there's always somebody around, but it wasn't always consistently the same person. The day that Erin disappeared was really not any different than any other day at our house. Her dad had just got home from work, and he worked third shift, so he was asleep. Got up about the same time that she would have left. It's all kind of crosses. And I was babysitting a friend's kids. And she called me and asked me for a ride so she could go to her friend's house, to go to Britt's house. And I told her that I couldn't take her right now. So I was done with them, and I'd be home as soon as I was done babysitting. And by the time I got home, she'd already left. There was kids at my house because the boys had friends over. And she'd said she was going to Britt's house, and we made the assumption that that's where she was. And no one had anything to think anything different. From my house, her sister was the last person to talk to her, and they were talking while she was getting ready to leave. She was going to her friend Britt's house, and they were planning a birthday party for the next week for Britt, which is why she was going there. She was upset that none of us were giving her a ride, and she knew she couldn't walk in the dark, and it's a couple miles to get to Britt's house. And so she was complaining about it, that no one would give her a ride when she wanted a ride, basically.
Erin was upset that she couldn't get a ride, so one of her older brother's friends offered to drive her over to Britt's. After he left the house with Erin, she was never seen again. But her family didn't know she was missing immediately, because they were under the impression that she had made it to Britt's home. It seemed like a simple situation. Erin's older brother Jim was hanging out with his friend Curtis. Curtis had offered to take Erin to her friend Britt's house. But when Erin arrived at her friend's home, Britt had made a short trip to a local convenience store in anticipation of their girls' night. According to Curtis, he claims that after they arrived at Britt's home, another car pulled up and Erin signaled to him that she was going to go with the people in the vehicle, and that he last saw her climbing into the back seat. Here's Carolyn again.
We didn't realize right away that she was missing. There's nothing back then that you tracked your kids with, really. So it was a Sunday night that all this had happened, and I had to go to work the next day. So I called in the morning, and she was supposed to be home because she had something to do that morning, and she wasn't home. And so I called and said, you know, you really need to get yourself home. You got to be there in the afternoon. And when I called Britt, Britt didn't answer. And I don't remember if there was a message or not. I went to work, and about noon, I called to check on her, and she still wasn't home, and she still hadn't checked in. And so I went to Britt's house when I got out of work, off of work. I was really not happy because she was supposed to be home, and she wasn't home, and it just had barrel rolled. And so I got to Britt's house, and she didn't answer again. And because it turns out she was at work. And I left a note on the door and told Britt to tell Erin to call me because she was supposed to have been home and she wasn't there. And I got a call from Brittany about 7 o'clock, 7 or 8 o'clock, somewhere in there, that said that Erin had never been there. And I realized I didn't know where my kid was.
All that time, everyone had thought that Erin had made it to Britt's house safely and had spent the night. But in the flash of a moment, Carolyn realized that this was more than just a miscommunication. She told us what was going through her mind at this time.
My initial reaction was, she lived with us, she didn't live with her mom. So I thought maybe something had happened and she'd gone to her mom's house instead, because her mom didn't live too far from Britt's. So I went to her mom's house because her mom didn't have a phone. And I went to her mom's house to try and get her and left her a note and said, you know, call me, I need to talk to Erin. And that was on Monday. And on Tuesday, she still hadn't called me back. And I was still going on, though, that she was at her house. I'd called absolutely every phone number that we had for every friend. And every friend we talked to, we said, who else should we call? And they gave us numbers. And I couldn't tell you how many phone calls. And the only reason I even had those phone numbers were because she had an address book. It was kind of like a planner, address book kind of a thing. And she had that, and she had everybody's phone numbers in it. And I called every phone number in that book. And no one had seen her, and no one had talked to her. So I went from there to Chris's house again, to her mom's house, and left another note. And then Chris called me. It was Tuesday about noon. Chris called, and she said, why do you keep coming to my house? And I said, because I need to talk to Erin. She says, I don't know where Erin is. Why is she not with you? then I knew for sure that we had no idea where she was. I don't know that that moment was any different than the first one, but I went from there and I filed a report with the police department. When we called to make the report, you filed the report with records because that's where runaway reports went, which is what they assumed as soon as you called. I filed a missing persons report with the same people that I had filed a report with that when their kid's bike had gotten stolen earlier that summer. Talked to the exact same people. It gets even worse than that, though. So I filed the report with the records department that my kid was missing, and I went to work. I had to go to work the next day, and so that was Wednesday. They told me an officer would call me. Never heard from anybody, never heard from anybody, never heard from anybody. I left work early on Wednesday, and I went to the police department. And when you go there, there's this huge lobby, and I went up to the desk, and I said I wanted to talk to an officer because I'd filed the missing persons report, and they needed to talk to somebody. They said, okay, well, we'll have an officer come out to your house and whatever. So I went home, and no officer showed up. And I called dispatch, the non-emergency number, and still no officer showed up. I had to go to work the next day because, you know, I have to work. And again, I left about noon. I went back to the police department, and I said I wasn't leaving until I talked to an officer. And I sat there through the shift change, and the shift change was at about 5 or 6 o'clock. At the end of that shift, they told me that the officer was going to come to my house and that they were sending an officer and that he would take the report. Well, a detective did come to my house later that day. He asked me questions, and I told him things, and he said, well, kids run away all the time, and they show back up real quick, so just here's the things you can do.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. It was clear from the very beginning that the police assumed that Aaron was a runaway. But if you ask anyone who actually knew Aaron, something just didn't seem right. Another one of Aaron's friends, Melissa, told us that Aaron had no reason to run away, and it simply wasn't in her character to do such a thing.
At that age, people think, oh, she ran away. Oh, she'll show up. And I think that's probably what everybody just assumed. She wasn't really, as far as I know, wasn't into a lot of trouble or anything like that. She had plans to meet a friend, go to a friend's house and watch movies. And so her brother's friend, a friend of the family, I believe it was, volunteered to drop her off there. And she gets there and nobody was home. It wasn't as easy to contact everyone back then. So he was going to take her back home. Well, according to him, a vehicle pulled up to her and she talked to the guys in that car and then told the guy who dropped her off, hey, these guys will give me a ride. She got in the back seat. That was it. That was the last time anyone saw her. There were no other witnesses to say if they saw that vehicle in the area or not. So it's kind of just his word. She vanished. I mean, she got in that vehicle or wherever, and there was no sign of her. Obviously, we didn't have a lot of security footage or anything back then to go off of.
After days of pressing the police to take a report, Carolyn was starting to gain some traction, even though the police believed that Aaron had simply run away. Aaron's friend Christy told us how she found out that her friend was gone.
She went missing in June, and I think we moved in like March. And I actually found out about it on the news, and my parents screamed for me to come downstairs in Charlotte, and it was on the news. I believe it was the World News, because I got down there, and my mom's like, look at the TV, and I just started bawling. I lost it. I completely lost it. I was instantly scared, because at first, I did wonder. I'm like, maybe she just ran away. Maybe, just maybe. And then I remember when a year had went by and there was still no word, nothing. And I was telling my parents, and my parents can tell you, I've said it since that 1 year mark. I said, she didn't run away. She did not run away. Something happened to her. This just isn't Aaron. Aaron doesn't just disappear like that. Even if she was mad on her worst days and had run away, she would have been right back. She would have contacted somebody. Aaron doesn't just leave with nothing. Aaron doesn't just not contact anyone. She had too many people that loved her so much and too many ways of, I mean, getting in touch with them. Her family stayed in that house for years and years after.
Even though it was clear that something awful had happened to Aaron, Carolyn continued to wonder if there had been a miscommunication and if it was possible that Aaron wasn't able to get in touch with her. This was, after all, 2001, and cell phones weren't as common then.
You make up things in your head. Well, okay, maybe this is what happened. Maybe she went to so-and-so's house and doesn't have a phone. Maybe she'd spent spring break with her aunt in Nevada, which was about an hour and a half away. Maybe something happened and she went back to Lori's house. She wasn't there. And everywhere we called, she wasn't there. But you kept assuming that she was going to show up. I mean, and this is summer. School had just gotten out like a couple days before. This was on Sunday. School got out like Thursday or Friday of that week, and they had all these plans for the whole summer. So every time a plan, I kept thinking, you know, this is planned for, well, Britt's birthday is going to be in a couple of days. She's going to be home for Britt's birthday. And then she wasn't home. And then you think, well, she'll be home for this. And then she wasn't home for that. If something really did happen and she did run away, then maybe she did. And if she did, then she'll be home for the 4th of July because she loves parties. And then she wasn't home for the 4th of July.
It simply didn't make sense that Aaron would just take off. She was excited about seeing her friend and about making plans for the party the next weekend. So naturally, Aaron's family, friends, and police turned to the last person who had seen Aaron alive, a man named Curtis Padgett, who was a friend of Aaron's older brother, Jim. Curtis was several years older than Aaron, but had been around the Pospisil family for many years. Carolyn told us how the family knew Curtis and why it wasn't at all strange that he was dropping Aaron off at a friend's house.
We had a very chaotic house because we were the house that everybody went to. So there was always extra people there. All the kids. I mean, I think there's some kid neighborhood kids that lived at our house more than they lived at their own. So there was always extra people. There were always people coming and going. Our house was definitely not a quiet house. A lot of people tell you that the kid that gave her a ride is what happened and where she's at, and that he did something. And that's what my kid, my husband, and my boys believe. Curtis said, well, I'll give you a ride. I'm leaving anyway. And Curtis's truck is what they were going to go in. And Curtis's truck had the seats had holes in them. And so he had duct tape on the seats. And she just put on new clothes. And so she didn't want to get duct tape on her clothes. And so she took a blanket with her because she said, well, I don't really want to ride in Curtis's truck because of the duct tape. And somebody said, well, just throw something down. So she took a blanket with her. From what I know, she put the blanket on the seat of the car and left with Curtis. And Curtis is going to give her a ride to Bert's house. That's the last that we know for sure what happened. What we've been told is that Curtis gave her the ride. They got to Bert's house. And she went up to the door and nobody was there. Turns out that Brett had gone to the store to get snacks and drinks. She was expecting Aaron to be there later, so she wasn't home at the time. Curtis says that she came back down, and then about the same time, a black Cavalier pulled up on the street. It's a one-way, and the car came down the street the wrong way and said something to Aaron, and she talked to them for a second, and she told Curtis, "Oh, these guys are going to give me a ride home. I'll see you later. Thanks for the ride." And she got into the back seat of their car, and that's the last time anybody knows anything.
Aaron's friend Amy told us that in the immediate aftermath of Aaron's disappearance, everyone wanted to know what happened after Curtis had dropped Aaron off. If what Curtis had said was true, who were these mystery people in the black Cavalier? And why had they shown up to Britt's house at the precise moment that Curtis and Aaron arrived? We asked Amy if she felt like Curtis was honest with law enforcement about dropping Aaron off and last seeing her get into a car with unknown males.
Curtis was the last one to see her. A couple years later, he was actually part of an investigation for a guy that had died in an apartment in the apartment complex that he lived in, too. And he was the last person to see him, also. I believe Curtis knows what happened to her. He's a strange guy. We actually worked with him at McDonald's in Cedar Rapids, and he gave you off that vibe of that weird, I don't even know how to describe it. It was before she disappeared. That's actually how we met Curtis, was through, because he worked with us at McDonald's. He did have a strange obsession with Aaron, because when I'd be working with him, he'd ask me, "Hey, what's Aaron doing today? What are you guys going to do after work?" Because when I would get off work, I would go over there and, you know, we'd all go hang out. Like I said, we grew up together.
Aaron's friend Christy isn't so sure that she believes Curtis's story, and she thinks that he may know more than he's shared.
I know that he has had his side of the story on what happened, that apparently she just got out of his truck. They were waiting because the friend wasn't there. She'd run down the street for snacks with her mom. Aaron got out of the truck and walked over to a black Cavalier with tinted windows, is the last known vehicle that supposedly she had talked to anybody at. She spoke to somebody like she knew him, a couple guys in the car, and said, "These guys will give me a ride," got in the car and just never came back. I mean, he was definitely somebody that was around a lot. He's got a very sketchy past. Very. His neighbor was murdered. His next door neighbor in an apartment building was murdered. And they had to question him because he was the last person to see him alive. He did have anything to do with it. We were told he sold his truck, the truck she was riding in last. He turned around and sold it almost immediately afterwards. So when the police wanted to search his truck, he didn't have it any longer. It was sold. There's a lot. So my theory is my own head, because, you know, everybody has to come up with their own at some point, is Curtis had everything in the world to do with her disappearance. And whether it be he tried something with her and she turned him down or whatnot and got him, made him mad. People from school have commented on Curtis saying that he used to be the type that would just lash out at anything.
Christy has maintained her friendship with Aaron's older brother, Jim, over the years, and discussed with us how he's handled the fact that it was his friend who was last to see his sister alive.
You know, he's been around the family for years. It was nothing for Curtis to come around and nothing for Curtis to give them rides and stuff like that. Jim holds a lot of guilt. I know he loved Aaron dearly. Both Eric and Jim did, just dearly. I started hanging around Jim a lot more when I first moved back. We started getting together and hanging out quite a bit. And of course, she would come up into conversations. And I know that they had had a few words that day before she left. They'd gotten into an argument, but that's normal. They fought all the time. They were sister and brother. And I know that a lot broke out between Jim and Curtis after Aaron disappeared. I don't know all the details to it because Jim stays pretty guarded on that kind of information. And so he holds a lot of guilt, just feeling like maybe, you know, maybe he could have done something, maybe, but nobody expected this. This wasn't his fault, obviously. So there was no need to hold grudges. When he got extremely sick, I was reaching out to him constantly while he was in the hospital because they really didn't think he was going to make it. And the cancer was killing him, and then everything else that was going on with all the stress, and just it was a lot going on at once, and nobody knows what happened to her. So we're all kind of on the same page there. And it sucks but nobody can change what happened at this point. It's just a matter of let's just try to get some closure and find her.
Christy explained that the police have spoken with Curtis, but she still wonders if he's involved and what could have possibly gone wrong when he went to give Aaron a ride.
They've spoken to him. I don't feel like CRPD did much of anything. I mean, I'm sure they did, but I don't feel like they did as much as they should have with her disappearance. Because a lot of times I feel like no body, no evidence. She's out there somewhere. Whether it be just a body, at least it would bring closure. She's out there.
To me, the only thing that comes to mind is she turned him down. Maybe he made a sexual advance at her and she turned him down and he snapped. That's my number one. Or they got into some type of argument over God knows what. Something happened. And I feel like Curtis is the only one that really does know. And other people have said that too. Curtis really is the only one that knows for sure what happened those last few minutes, even if she did get in that vehicle. I don't feel like he's ever told the truth. I don't think he ever will. I think he's pretty sure he's gotten away with it. If he did do something, he got away with it now. But you don't just sell a truck either, knowing that that's the last place this child was. You don't just get rid of it like that with her stuff inside of it. Her bag was still in his truck. Why did she leave without her bag? Why? None of it makes any sense to me. None of it does. And I know that I'm not the only one that feels that way. I do think that whatever happened between him and Aaron, he's a male. He was a teenager. He could easily gotten upset if she turned him down when he was making advances, anything. And the fact that he still had her stuff, that she was going to get in this car, where were these people taking her to begin with? She was where she was supposed to be waiting on her friend to come home. Why would you get in a vehicle, oh, these guys will give me a ride, and leave your stuff? Why wouldn't you take your stuff? None of it adds up. And these are things Aaron doesn't leave her house without. So you can't tell me she just decided to hop in some random guy's car and just decided, I don't need my stuff today. I'll just leave it with Curtis. And then you don't have a truck to show for it later. You don't have a truck. So when they're asking to search it, you don't have it. What do you mean?
As you've heard Amy and Christy mention, Aaron's disappearance isn't the only unsolved case where Curtis's name has come up. Melissa told us more about the local murder case that Curtis is oddly close to.
Everything comes back to me of that guy she was last seen with. I don't know the guy, but his name is Curtis Padgett. So he was, I believe, a friend of her brother's, but he was the last person to see her. And then in 2007, he was the last person to see his neighbor alive before he was found murdered. And that is another unsolved case. So even though it's a totally different situation, when somebody is involved in two crimes, so to speak, it makes you wonder a little bit about that person. So in this case, it was an older gentleman who was his neighbor. He lived next door and said that he had last seen him a couple days prior. And then the guy was found. And I think he was stabbed to death in his apartment. And there's still, again, that case has not been solved. And that was in 2007.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Several months after Aaron vanished, and even years later, there were a few possible sightings of Aaron that seemed potentially credible. Amy told us more about those.
I think it was her mom's ex-boyfriend, her biological mom's ex-boyfriend, had said that she had seen Aaron in the back of a car at a gas station, a black Chevy Cavalier. By the time anybody got down there, the Cavalier was gone and everything. I guess there was one time, too, that my mom and I were working together at McDonald's, and somebody had came in that knew of the story and everything, and that knew my mom and I and knew Aaron, and said that they thought they saw Aaron a couple blocks up. So my mom had left real quick and ran up there to go see, and by the time my mom got up there, there was nobody up there. So we don't know if that person was just, you know, messing around or what they were doing.
Amy told us about a time several years after Aaron had vanished, that she thinks she may have actually run into Aaron and spoken to her. This is what she shared with us about that eerie encounter.
I was out at the bar in Marion with my mom, probably 5 years after she disappeared. This girl walks in and she looked just like Aaron. I struck up a conversation with her. I called Aunt Carolyn first and told Aunt Carolyn what was going on, and you know, she's like, well, strike up a conversation with her and, you know, see what's going on. And I did. And, you know, I'm a smoker. She was a smoker. I know she shouldn't have been, but she was a smoker back then, too. And so I was like, hey, do you smoke? Let's go out and have a cigarette. So we went outside and we were outside having a cigarette. The guys that she was in the bar with come out and told her, we got to go now, and grabbed her by the arm and put her in the back of a car and took off. There was no license plates or anything, so I couldn't call the Marion Police Department to tell them, hey, this is what's going on. Here's the license plate number and all that. Like I said, it was like 5 years after Aaron had disappeared, and this girl looked just like what Aaron would have looked like at the age progression. Like I said, Aaron and I grew up together, and, you know, even now today, if I would happen to see her on the street somewhere, I would know. I mean, in my heart and my mind, I would know that it was Aaron. And I would, you know, I would walk up to them and strike a conversation with them and, you know, have whoever else I'm with call the local police department and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on, and maybe have them come and investigate and see if they can't figure it out, too. But in my heart, in my mind, when I saw the girl walk into the bar, it just struck me as Aaron. And my mom even said the same thing. They got into like a little sedan car and took off, but the way that they took her and like took her by the arm and like forced her into the car when I was sitting there talking to her, because I had asked her, I'm like, hey, you know, you look like my cousin Aaron that had disappeared. The girl was like, yeah, I've been getting that a lot, because when that all happened, there was actually a big, huge billboard up in Cedar Rapids that had Aaron's picture on it and missing, and the helpfindachild.com and all that stuff that my Aunt Carolyn made up. She goes, I saw the billboard, and she's like, I do look like her. So in my mind at that time, I was like, okay, did people that have her brainwash her to think that she was somebody else? Because she said her name wasn't Aaron.
This possible sighting of Aaron is interesting and not the kind of thing that we hear often. Amy and Aaron grew up together. Think about your childhood friends that you spent a lot of time with growing up. If you saw them today, you would probably recognize them from a mile away, right? Was this a case of an Aaron lookalike, or could it have truly been her? This possible sighting and the way the woman was treated by the men she was with has fueled theories about human trafficking.
She could be in a sex trafficking ring at this point. But to me, I think Erin's just too much of a fighter. I don't see somebody holding her that long. I really don't. Even if something like that had happened, you know, like when the girls from Ohio were found, that news was just like, oh my God, this has to happen soon. Erin's going to be found. She has to. There's no way these girls were abducted and kept in basement and, you know, this long, locked away in this house. Maybe, just maybe, they'll find Erin.
Everyone that we spoke to had a different perspective on the law enforcement investigation into Erin's disappearance. Though it seemed that law enforcement believed that Erin would eventually return, it's hard to know exactly where they stand on that today. We did reach out to the Cedar Rapids Police Department, whose public information officer told us that they'd ask the lead detective if they would talk to us. However, we got no further response to our requests. This is what Melissa's perspective is on the police investigation.
They've always been really good with outreach and getting involved with the community. The fact that they still have her case opened and that our cold case team is working on it makes me think that, I mean, they care. They do care. They want to solve it. And we actually, our police department just solved an old cold case murder from 40 years ago using DNA technology. Again, that is a little harder to do when you don't have a crime scene. But I mean, they think that as they've gotten more technology, more funding, they're able to look at these old cases and bring closure to them. So I personally think that our police department is great. They do their job. I don't know if any balls were dropped during this case. It's so hard to say.
Carolyn feels that the police were too quick to write off Erin's disappearance as a runaway, and she's not sure that they've ever changed their stance.
We knew from day one that she hadn't run away. I mean, this is my kid that you knew exactly how she felt all the time about everything. And if she was mad at you, you knew exactly why she was mad and what she expected you to do to fix it. So if she'd been mad that day or upset about something and left voluntarily, you'd have known that. And that was the first thing I asked everybody, was she mad when she left? And everybody's like, no, she wasn't mad at all. And the only thing she was mad about that somebody wouldn't give her a ride right away. And she did have a lot of, you know, normal teenager problems. And like any teenager, you know, she's 15, or she just turned 15. But, you know, 13, 14, and no teenager gets along with their parents when they're that age, you know. And so that was the first thing that they used. They said, well, you know, she was having problems and you guys were having issues and that's why she left. I'm like, but we were having normal teenager issues. Well, normal teenagers run away.
Carolyn told us about some of the things that she knows that the police have done to find Erin.
Okay, I can't say they did nothing early on. They did interview some, like, family people. Like, they went to them and asked them. Like, they went to her mom's dad and said, when was the last time you talked to Erin? And he said, well, she was over at my house asking for money. Okay, well, it was her birthday, and she was trying to be, hey, give me my birthday money kind of a thing, you know? So there was that, and they did talk to some other friends and a couple family. And when they did, certain people in our family, like anybody else's family that you just don't necessarily get along with really well. And those are the people that they started with. And as soon as they started with them, as soon as they heard something that they thought they could turn into something else, they quit asking and they quit looking. And they assumed at that point that she definitely had run away. But this is also family that we didn't talk to. And they decided, they wrote it off. Like I said, we didn't have the perfect home life. I mean, our house was chaos. Some of it was because it was in and out and because we had adults that had several jobs, and I wouldn't say it was chaos in a bad way. It just was. It was always constantly, something was always going on. We didn't have the perfect life in any way. But I think if you start really microscoping anybody's life, everybody's always got skeletons. We never kept any of those skeletons in the closet when she disappeared, though, that's for sure.
Erin's friends told us that Curtis had sold his truck shortly after Erin disappeared. To their knowledge, there was never any effort put forth to track down the truck and search it. That was one thing that we had really hoped to ask the police about. Carolyn told us what she knows about the investigation into Curtis Padgett, the last known person to see Erin alive.
They did interview Curtis, and he agreed to take a lie detector test. And he passed the lie detector test. The first one was inconclusive. The second one he passed. He was a person of interest, and he was the last person that saw someone that was murdered. Police office, Marty DeVore, said to me, psychopaths will pass a lie detector test because they have no guilt, so there's no physical response.
Aaron's friend Christy doesn't believe her case is a priority for police now, and that it definitely wasn't when she disappeared.
Honestly, I do not think CRPD has had her on their mind at all in many, many years. I do not. I do not think that this is something that they're still even focused on. They pretty much just threw her away as a runaway when it first happened. And once that's planted in people's minds, especially within a police force like CRPD, that's what they just kind of chalk her up as. And then, you know, I just noticed recently that they had stated she was an endangered runaway or possible homicide, suspected homicide. And to me, it's just like, you just now updated that. That has not been up long. And I just found that actually last week. I saw that online. And I'm like, you just now updated that. And what are you doing any different, though? What are you doing? I don't feel like CRPD has had that as even a priority of theirs. Just after so many years, you eventually have to change the status, maybe. Or, you know, you feel like maybe if we change the status, we'll shut everybody up. But no, she's still gone. She's still missing. Nobody has any answers. Nobody's any closer to finding any. She has been through a lot in her life. And I promise you, if she hadn't run away through any of that, she wasn't about to run away then. You don't plan a sleepover. You don't get excited and get over there and everything to run away. That's not how that works. Erin could have walked out that door if she wanted to that badly. She is gone. She's gone, but she did not run away. This was not at her own doing. This was not her being willing to take off. She doesn't take off on people like that. She never has. At the very least, she would have reached out to Carolyn. She would have reached out to one of her friends, at least one.
They probably could have gotten a lot further ahead had they actually focused more on this case instead of just, oh, she's a runaway, and left it at that.
Aaron's friend Melissa told us that she sees Aaron's case differently 20 years later, now that she's a mother herself. She remains cautiously optimistic that with new developments in technology, that someday there will be a big break in Aaron's case.
Just seeing how much hope their family still has and how they haven't given up after all these years, and then also seeing all the things that she's missed and being a mom myself now, I think I take it even harder, kind of wondering, like, how does somebody just vanish? And what does your family do when you're gone and they don't have any answers? And so, I mean, I think about her all the time. It's something that's always in the back of my mind. And every time I hear of like these cold cases getting solved with DNA or something, it brings me hope. But obviously, I mean, we don't really have any evidence because she was never found. So it makes me wonder if there could ever be any way to even solve this if nobody comes forward. I mean, somebody has to know something. I mean, I don't know. After 20 years, it's to me obvious that if she did run away, which I don't think is the case, I would think that somehow you'd find her. I mean, a teenager doesn't have like the means to just disappear like that. I am afraid that something more sinister happened, whether she knew the guys in the car or not, or if that even existed, if it wasn't this person she was last seen with. I assume that maybe whoever she was with, she trusted them, and maybe something went wrong. Within the last 5 years, I follow a page, Name Us. It'll show, sometimes they make that kind of image of what they would look like. And there was one that was found. So we're in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It's a few hours from Chicago, Illinois. So there was one that showed up that was found in the south side of Chicago. The picture looked like it could be her. And the age range was just about right. I believe the body was found in like the early 2000s. So while it wasn't the exact year she went missing, it was within a few years of that. I did reach out to our local law enforcement. They said that they are still working it as a cold case. They said that that lead was investigated and it was not her.
Erin's disappearance has had an impact on so many of those that she knew and loved. Her friends have now become mothers themselves. And what happened to Erin affects how they parent their own children. Christy told us more about how this has impacted her own life.
She's honestly somebody that I don't think a day goes by we don't think of her. I have a daughter now that she is guarded so tightly now just because I know it can happen. It's happened. I've lived through it, you know. So she's definitely someone I've had to teach my daughter about kind of what happened to her now that she's 5 and just, you know, the dangers of everything. She's not allowed to leave my sight. Even, you know, I have to watch her physically walk into a door now when she's going to babysitters. I don't take any chances now because Aaron just wasn't supposed to happen.
It has scared me so bad, honestly. Not knowing is the worst part. Every time they give these horrific things on the news about these missing kids, and I'm just, every time, I just look at my daughter, and I can't tell you how many times I've cried trying to explain to her. She disappeared from me one day in a store. She took off around the corner, and I freaked out. I honestly did. I had become very guarded with her. I don't trust anyone right now. I can't. Trying to explain to a five-year-old the dangers out there. They're so confused because they're trying to see good in people, and so are we, but no one knows what happens, you know? And we don't know, is this something that someone bad just really did take her? It was nothing for us as kids to go, me and Aaron and even her brothers and little sister. It was nothing for us to just go all out, walk out our doors and wander the neighborhood together or wander in the neighborhood alone. It was nothing. Nobody ever thought something like this could happen. And it did. And we grew up this way where it was okay to just play in the neighborhood and play with the neighborhood kids. And we were all over the block. As long as we could hear our parents yell for us, we were all over it. That's what's so hard raising my daughter this way now, because I feel like she can't just be a kid.
Meanwhile, Carolyn feels the same way many parents of missing children do, and wonders about the what-ifs and the if-onlys.
I still kind of in my head think, oh, well, this will be great and she'll be here. She'll show up for her sisters, whatever, for the 21st birthday. And oh my gosh, there's a baby coming. She'll want to be here. Part of me still thinks she's going to walk in the door for something. I just want to know. Maybe she pops up on Facebook one day and says, hey, you know, this is me. And honestly, that would be the best thing. To know that this was voluntary. I would love for this to all have been voluntary. Even though it would crush us, the fact that she chose to do it. I can't say that there was ever an event or a thing that she is gone permanently, because that's not the way my brain works. I know that a lot of people in our life and in her life have decided that she's gone and that somebody did something to her and she's never coming back, and that eventually we'll find a body somewhere. But that's what they've had to do to get through to the next thing, to be okay. For some people, that was at different points. I mean, some people that was a year in, some people that was 5 years in. My boys walked around very angry at her for a couple years because they were going on, well, we're going to assume that she ran away because that was easier, and that they were mad at her for putting everybody through this. I always had ideas in my head. I'd have these dreams that she was stuck in something. Like that she was stuck in quicksand, you know, the weirdest things, or that she was stuck in tar and she couldn't get to us, or that she was in a room and she just couldn't get out because the door wouldn't work. And then there was an incident that happened, and they found two bodies in barrels in the water, not too far from us. And then it was, my head was, oh my God, that's my kid. She's in a barrel. And so then all those dreams started all over again. And so my brain was always trying to figure out what was going on. And I'd have the wildest dreams. I still do sometimes, especially right now when it's around anniversaries and things. I never knew what to expect, so my brain just tried to expect everything. I'm very much a planner. I need to have a plan. And I had a plan for a long time for every scenario for us finding her and what I would do and how that would work. I don't know what point I quit planning. But at some point I did.
So what happened to 15-year-old Aaron Pospisil after she asked for a ride to a friend's house on June 3rd, 2001? If what Curtis says is true, did she get into another vehicle with some unknown people after realizing that her friend wasn't home? Or was that a lie and Curtis knows more about what happened to Aaron? Why did Curtis get rid of his truck after Aaron disappeared? And what about this story of his neighbor who was found murdered? Just like Aaron, that case remains unsolved today. Or did something entirely different happen, and Aaron met with foul play, or was taken and trafficked? Who was the woman that Aaron's friend Amy saw years later in a bar? Could that have been her? There's so little information to go off of in Aaron's case, intertwined with strange sightings that seem to be credible. But yet 20 years have passed since Aaron was last seen alive. At the time of her disappearance, Aaron was 15 years old. She was about 5'3" tall and weighed approximately 130 pounds. She had brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Erin Pospisil, you're asked to call the Cedar Rapids Police Department at 319-286-5350.
She didn't get to graduate high school. She didn't get to go to college. She didn't get to get her first big job. She didn't get to get married, have kids. I mean, she was 15.
I think that they just kind of brushed it under the rug and just washed their hands of it.
I read something that's along the lines of that grief is just love with no place to go. And I really think that's true. So I just try to do one foot in front of the other for everybody else. And then I just have to give myself permission to not be okay when I can't be okay. It takes a lot of grace to do that with yourself, and I've not functioned very well in that arena. You're like, well, what if this had happened differently? Or what if this had happened differently? I mean, even to the point where we were going to move to Nashville a year before, and then we didn't move because of something else that happened. And I'm like, what if we'd moved? None of this would have ever happened. I mean, what if I left my friend's house? Or what if I'd never gone to babysit in the first place? What if I'd known the night that she didn't come home that she wasn't coming home? Maybe did I not pay enough attention to my kid?
Every year that's gone by, I mean, I have always, 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 especially when the internet became such a big deal, kept up with the case as much as I possibly could. Everything that was posted, people's comments, I read everything. I remember laying in a hotel room one night when I was waiting on my flight to come back to Cedar Rapids. I was laying in a hotel room one night by myself, just crying, reading more and more stuff. And I'm like, God, where is she at? This just isn't Erin. I mean, I remember going down 380 and seeing her billboard and just crying. Shortly after I moved back, I hated it. Everywhere I turned, there were missing flyers at grocery stores. I would turn around, leaving a gas station, there was her picture again. And I'm just like, it's everywhere. She did not just go away on her own.
That brings us to the end of episode 297. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way you can support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Missouri. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.